Welcome back, everybody. My name is Kieran Lyant. This is Still Talking. I'm the guy who does not shut up at all about sports. It's Easy Lover by Philip Bailey and the legendary Phil Collins. Now, I want to start things off here by making a little bit of an apology. As you know, I'm sick of talking about the Jets, but I fear that I have to make one more mention of this wretched team. Because last week, while I was talking about the Jets, and more specifically Aaron Rodgers, I really went in on him. And look, I want to get into this business. I want to become a sportscaster, a broadcaster, because I think that there's a lot that it can do, a lot of great things it can do, and I want to hold better standards for this field, this industry. And I mentioned last week, we need to hold better standards to our athletes, to these guys we pay millions of dollars to, that we put on pedestals, but I need to hold a better standard for myself. Because while I don't like Aaron Rodgers as a player, well, he's a great player, but while I don't like Aaron Rodgers that much, I wouldn't call myself a fan. I made him out to be some kind of a villain. Do I think he's arrogant? A little bit. Do I think he's egotistical? Probably. Do I like some of the political things he says? No, I don't. Do I think that he's the greatest teammate? I'm not in the locker room, so I can't speculate, but I have seen some bad signs. However, he does not deserve to be talked about that way. And I know he's probably not going to listen to this, but I still feel that I have the onus to make up for my mistakes whenever I go in on somebody like that. Aaron Rodgers is not some villain. He's not an evil person. He's a football player with some dicey opinions and always has a quote. To point out how Aaron Rodgers isn't a bad person, I just compiled a list of some of the good things Aaron Rodgers has done, that some of the good things he's used his privilege and his platform for. Aaron Rodgers has worked with Midwest Athletes Against Childhood Cancer, or the MAC Fund, for over a decade. While he was in Green Bay, he would put together this annual little event called the Rodgers 12 Days of Christmas, where for the 12 days leading up to Christmas, because his number is 12, they would showcase a child with cancer, and they would just write a little piece about them. And during this time, whenever people shopped at certain stores, a percentage of what they bought would go towards the MAC Fund. He's raised over $3 million for research against childhood cancer. He also worked with the North Valley Community Foundation, located in Northern California, where he's from. He donated $1 million to help relief to small businesses that were affected by the pandemic. He also started the Aaron Rodgers Fire Recovery Fund with the North Valley Community Foundation. He's raised money as a guest Jeopardy host because he's a big fan of Jeopardy, and all that money went toward the NVCF. And he's also worked, during his time with the Packers, he worked annually with the Salvation Army. He would host annual photograph signings during the Christmas season in support of it. So while I don't really like Aaron Rodgers that much, I do owe him an apology. So Aaron, I am sorry. Now that I've gotten that out of the way, I would like to reintroduce a good friend of mine and a friend of the show. I'm so glad he's back because we're here to talk some NBA. I know if you're listening, Michael said I'm going to be talking about Thursday Night Football. I'm not going to talk about all I have to say is the refs suck. I don't know how you missed that call. But joining me now is my good friend of the show, Sal Knight.
Hello, how are we doing today, Kieran?
Well, I'm great. Now that I've gotten that off my chest, I'm feeling better.
That's great. I'm happy to be back.
I'm happy to have you back. I don't get to see you very often. It's always great. Always awesome to talk some NBA. And look, the NBA season has finally started. It started on Tuesday, kicked off with Knicks Celtics and a blowout win for the defending champs. Then the LA Lakers, who always get every primetime game, they got a win against the Timberwolves. How excited are you for the NBA to be back? I know it's your favorite league.
You know, I'm really happy to have some basketball going on. It was unfortunate that it did happen to fall right in the middle of exam season. Mm. But now that that's over, can be a little more engaged in everything. I know there were some pretty stellar games that have already happened. I mean, that LeBron game for the Lakers, you know, another historic moment, first father-son duo.
Yep.
Super awesome. I love that. Not the biggest LeBron fan, but I do have a lot of respect for him. I mean, he's decimated my team many, many times.
Mine too.
But, I mean, just seeing him go hoop with his son on the same at the same time.
Yeah.
And when he checked in, he was trying to be all nonchalant. And
he's
kind of, you know, giving
like
him a little bit of an
deal.
Aura. But, yeah. You know, it was pretty cool. And I know AD joked after the game that it was like the first historic LeBron moment that they haven't not lost in. because I saw that in LeBron's Lakers debut, they lost.
Right, yeah.
The 40,000 points they lost.
When he broke Kareem's record,
yeah, when he broke Kareem's record, they lost. They lost when he passed Moses Malone. Like, all these different milestones, they always ended up losing. This is the first time that a LeBron history moment has also led to a win.
Well, hey, you know what? I actually didn't, looking back on it, I realized that, but no, that's cool. So, much has been made about the Bronny to the Lakers thing. Look, there's a lot of people who say he's just not, most people say he's just not a good NBA player. He should not be in the league. He's there out of, like, charity or pity almost. Where do you fall on this? Like, do you mind that the Lakers, like,
you know, it's an interesting topic. I am team supporting Bronny.
As am I.
I mean, I don't want to hate on him. I mean, like, the story, he's his own person. He does, you know, he had the trials and tribulations with his heart issue.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that while he might not be the most NBA-ready player, I mean, like, it was the 55th pick.
Yeah.
It's LeBron's son. It's like, you got to let it slide. I think, who knows? Maybe he puts in a good amount of work and he could turn out to be something kind of decent.
Personally, I think, like, yeah, right now he's incredibly raw. He's going to be not just inconsistent. He's going to be just bad
most
of the time.
He just looks small. Like, he looks small on the court, like a kid. Kinda.
He looks small and he doesn't know how to, like, he doesn't, I don't think he really looks like he knows how to use his space, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't really know how to take advantage of it, which is a big, like, key trait of what's made LeBron so good. LeBron's such a, like, physical force, but he also moves in space really well. I think Bronny, though, yeah, he's super raw. He's probably not going to be good for, like, 2 years. However, I'm also in support of Bronny. I do see the flashes, and I do see the potential. Look, one thing I think people have to realize about his 1 year at USC was he was, one, before the season, yeah, he has that heart issue, cardiac arrest or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's playing behind Isaiah Collier.
Yeah.
And I can't remember, there was someone else, I don't remember who. Right, and so he comes in halfway through the season. Again, this is his first game from high school to college, and he had a major, major medical issue in between that, and he comes back. So yeah, he's incredibly raw. Do I think he should have declared this early? I would have liked to see him wait another year. But, I mean, LeBron, for all we know, LeBron isn't going to retire. I don't think he's going to retire. But
it says 2 to 3 years for him. He's expected to play 2 to 3 more years.
Yeah, exactly. So
he's
going to
get that Bryce on the Lakers,
too. We're going to get Bryce, yeah.
Double.
But, like, I understand why there's maybe a bit of urgency to want to play with your dad. And I know Ernie Johnson was talking about it. Like, he related it to when he got to call games with his dad. And he said, he addressed LeBron directly. He said, you know, cherish these moments. These are, like, this is going to be the best time of your life, being able to play with your son and vice versa. So, yeah, I'm in full support of Bronny, but I also see the potential. I think that Bronny, yeah, has had an awful rap of things. With his medical issue, who he was playing behind at USC, all this attention, negative attention that he gets in the media and from fans. People just say he sucks. I've seen people liken him to Thanasis Antetokounmpo, who, by the way, is another guy I feel bad for. I don't like seeing all the memes about Thanasis, although some of them are kind of funny. So, yeah, I honestly do think that Bronny eventually within, I think by the time LeBron retires, Bronny will be a capable NBA player. I'm not going to speculate if he's a star. He's probably not.
No.
But I think he could be a Davion Mitchell. I think he could be someone like that.
Yeah, it could be like a kind of shorter, snub-nosed defending guard.
I think he could just be a disruptor.
Yeah.
Like, I think if he could just, like, literally all he has to do is shoot the three consistently, be able to make a couple layups, and then just lock down on defense, and he will have 10, 15 years.
Yeah, we can see what happens. I think, when LeBron's out, I think that he'll still be in the league. I don't know what capacity of a role he'll have, but, I mean, I could see him sticking around for a while. It all kind of just depends. Like, he has the tools to succeed. It's just like, will he utilize them, or will he get too comfortable?
I don't think he'll get too comfortable. I don't think there's any reason to think he'll get too comfortable. I do fully believe in Bronny. So, the Lakers, their opening night game was against the Timberwolves, where they ended up winning in these new-look Timberwolves. However, they just got a win yesterday against Sacramento. Big, close win. Now, before we go on to talk about yesterday's game, about a month ago was the big trade between the Knicks and the Timberwolves, where the Timberwolves traded their longtime first overall pick, all-star center, Karl-Anthony Towns. They got rid of him. They said they sent him off to New York, back to his home. And in return, they got Dante DiVincenzo and Julius Randle. Now, this was a sudden turnaround that came out of nowhere for Minnesota, and it's such a stark change because, again, 9 years of Cat, and then you had this Ant and Cat era that just went to the conference finals. Like, there was a lot of speculation, a lot of uncertainty. My thoughts after the trade was, look, Minnesota has balanced their roster more, but I still don't know how. I thought they were going to be a little bit slow to start, and I wasn't sure how they were deep, how they're going to be deeper into the season. What were your thoughts, though, after the Cat trade?
You know, I kind of like it for both sides. Looking on the Knicks side of things, last season, Julius Randle was the odd man out just due to the fact that he was injured the majority of the season. I know that him and Jalen Brunson had a good rating together when they did play, and they won a good amount of games together. But just when the Knicks started to get everything going, get everything together, and have their big playoff appearance, but losing to my team because but they were they put things together, and Julius Randle wasn't really a part of that vision anymore, it seemed. So shipping him away seemed kind of inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't expect it to be so close to training camp.
No, neither did
I. It seemed a little delayed, but yeah. I just remember I was out with one of my my friends, and it just randomly came up, and I was like, whoa, that's kind of crazy.
I was at my friend's house. We were getting ready to go to a social, and I saw it.
Yeah.
But on the Minnesota side of things, because I think this was an even bigger change for Minnesota. When Kat goes to the Knicks, UK, you're like, okay, automatically we know it's going to be good, because they got rid of the odd man out, like you said, and they got a true center because, Robinson's still hurt and they lost Stein. So I think everyone knew the Knicks were going to be solid with this. Minnesota was the, quagmire. They were the weird one. What were your, expectations or uncertainties about the
Wolves? Thing is, I will say, though, quickly, I don't know how I felt about it initially at the Knicks because they really only have Miles McBride off the bench right now. Mm-hmm. They don't really have any depth, which I think can definitely hurt them. But on the Minnesota side of things, I liked Randle. I think that he's another guy that's just going to go out there and get you buckets. He's a little more quicker, probably speeds up their offense a little bit. And he's also just a guy that I know we're going to talk about yesterday's game, but he's just a guy that does dirty work. His game's pretty ugly in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
Can't even forget to talk about Dante DiVincenzo. Now they have a guy
one of the best 3-point
could also run for sixth man of the year with the guy that just won sixth man of the year.
Nas
so they
Reese.
Got Nas and DiVincenzo now off the bench with a really good solid starting five. I think that Timberwolves team, honestly, I think got a little bit better.
You think so? They're better without Cat?
I think so, because I personally I think that Randle and Cat are kind of on similar levels, and then you're adding DiVincenzo. The Cat Gobert thing did end up working out a little bit, but I think that it's more traditional to not have two kind of, I wouldn't say Cat's slow, but
it was a very lopsided affair. It was because you had okay, in terms of the weight of each of the roster, where it was Anthony Edwards, and then it was Cat and Gobert, right? So it was Anthony Edwards out on the perimeter, and then Cat and Gobert down low. So it was kind of like a seesaw, right? It would be Ant, and then it would be Gobert and Cat, or maybe Naz Reid, right? And so it wasn't much in between. I do think Randle balances things out. I do think he fixes the roster construction really well for Minnesota. My general thoughts going into the season was, I thought they were going to struggle for a bit, which, we're only two games in, so I can't say, but they are 500. They did lose to the Lakers, who are a team I'm not super bullish on, right? Going forward, look, Anthony Edwards is going to be great. He's been good in both of the games so far. And Julius Randle, you can see here, in the Lakers game, I think that's going to be the worst of it. And then in this game against Sacramento, that's going to be the best of it. Because if Julius Randle is having a game like he had last night, where he scores 33 points and shoots 13 for 17, that's going to be money for them. Because now you really have a consistent force, not under the rim, but on the baseline as a power forward. Somewhere kind of in the middle. And then you still have Gobert, and you still have Naz Reid. And I think that, at their best, the Timberwolves can be probably one of the best offensive, rating teams in the league.
Yeah.
I know last year the defense was, the real, that was their marquee feature. It was just everybody locked in on defense and then give Ant the ball, right? So, look, I think this is the best it can get. Because look at their offense. So, like I said, Julius Randle had 33 points. But then Anthony Edwards, he had 32. He's going to get his bucket. So when you give him a second scoring co-star like that. Because there were times where Cat would just not shoot the ball well. And Ant would have to make up all the slack.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that you were, as a Timberwolves fan, that you would have been concerned about would be the loss of three-point shooting from their big man that's next to Gobert. Mm-hmm. Randall, again, has proven that he can be a good three-point shooter, but he's a little more streaky than a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns,
well, who's the best shooting,
you know,
big man
solidified
ever.
Himself as, again, one of the top three-point shooting bigs of all time. But I see Randall, I know in New York he used to be more of like a power forward center kind of guy. They'd have him run center a lot of the time. But in Minnesota, I see him more of as like a power forward primarily, and then maybe like can run some small forward minutes as well.
Because
I think that, you know, he plays a little more with the ball on the perimeter than Cat would. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was showcasing that last night. Like, I remember right before the end of the first quarter that he drained a nice little step back three, which was really nice. And he just kind of looks like he's got a little more control with the ball and can speed things up a little bit better than Cat would be able to.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of his buckets yesterday were, again, like I said, they're kind of like ugly styled buckets where it was like, you know, bruise in the paint, get in there. And he shot very efficiently. I think that it's a good thing that like takes a little bit of a pressure off Ant for being that like ultra aggressive guy.
No, absolutely. One thing that I am a little like not concerned about, but like something that like pops out to me is Rob Dillingham hasn't played in either of these two games because he showed out in the summer league. He showed out in the preseason. He's a guy you traded up for in the draft. He was one of the top prospects in this draft, right? So, like, I understand you have Ant, and then you have Conley, and you have DiVincenzo. But, like, do you have any thoughts on Dillingham not playing so far?
Yeah, I mean, I know he's he did have a pretty stellar preseason campaign. But, you know, I think if you got a guy like Uncle Mike, a seasoned NBA vet who's going to give you a solid, you know, close to 10 points, 5 assists every game.
Yeah.
And just like he's a high, high IQ basketball player that, you know, he's been playing with Anthony Edwards since the start of his, well, probably, what, Anthony Edwards has been
like
in the league for how long?
Ant's been here since 2020.
Yeah, so I think it would have been probably since the start. Don't fact check me on that.
Think,
might be one season removed.
I think
removed,
Conley
but,
has been there, yeah.
You know, he's been there for a while. He's a seasoned vet. I mean, Rob would not be taking his spot anytime this season, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
The backup spot, maybe. It looks like yesterday they only played, did
yeah,
a nine-man rotation.
Yeah, they did not
so,
go deep into their vet.
Yeah,
their
so,
bench.
I mean, I think he'll get some run at some point, but, I mean, the rookies kind of got to earn their spot, in my opinion. I mean, at least with my favorite team, I've seen that kind of happen over the past couple seasons where it's, you know, your rookies come in, they don't get really rotational minutes off rip.
Yeah.
It's more of kind of like you got to ease in, especially with a contending team that was just like projected to be potentially the one seed this year of their conference. It's like, you know, you need to earn your minutes to get in on that.
Yeah. No, I think, and then one thing about Minnesota going forward, sorry, just kind of circling back to the Randall thing here, is like, yeah, you mentioned how Randall could probably play some small forward minutes, and I do agree with that. And that made me realize, like, I think Minnesota could have one of the most lethal, like, big man lineups.
Yeah, they could do, like, Randall, Nas, and
Yeah, you could put Nas at power forward. Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, and so you just brought up the Pacers, and that's great, because the Pacers, so far, to start this very, very young infancy season of the NBA, the Pacers are 1-0. And no, I mean, it was against the Pistons, and it was really only 6 points. The Pistons are so bad, they tried to play six players for some reason. I don't know how they forgot that. But look, the Pacers were kind of, I don't want to say they were a surprise team, because they were good, and so was Tyrese, really early in the season last year. And then after the All-Star break, they make the big I'm getting my things mixed up. But then they make the big splash move for Siakam, so that brought attention back. And then in the playoffs, they kept going. So they weren't this surprise team, like they just came out of nowhere in April, but they were the upstart team in the East because, you know, it was the Sixers, it was the Heat, it was the Knicks, it was the Celtics, and then the Pacers came in there, and it ended up being the Pacers, Celtics, and Knicks. So, you know, good job for Indiana for getting the win, for beating the Pistons like you should. One thing I'm a little concerned about with Tyrese specifically, and by the way, as if anything has changed in Detroit, Cade Cunningham gets 28 points, 5 assists and 8 rebounds and just no help. But one thing I'm concerned about with Tyrese is, look, and I know it's only one game, but he shot 6 for 18, 33% from the field, and then he was 1 for 9 from 3. Normally, throughout his career, Tyrese Halliburton starts out this season shooting really, really well. And then in and around All-Star break is when he starts sort of like, he's not decisive with the shots he takes and the shots he wants, and his percentage goes down. And I know this because he's talked about it. He's aware of it. Like, Are you at all worried about Tyrese's shooting?
Not at all.
Why not?
I think that Tyrese, you know, one game doesn't really
tell
about his season.
I know it's one game, but
I mean, like, I just like the shot volume. I look at this game, it's like, sure, he missed a lot of shots, but like, he's taking 18 shots. That's what I want to see. I want to see him take that many shots every
game.
You
want to see him be aggressive.
Yeah, I want to see him take more shots. I mean, again, he didn't really have his best game. Again, he didn't lead the game in assists. That's what Siakam did.
Yeah.
So it was kind of an off night for Tyrese. He didn't end up making up for it, though, kind of calling the dagger at the end of the game.
That's true, yeah.
But, I mean, he's just got a lot of more guys that can kind of help him out there right now. Siakam seemed like a very average game, except he did almost get a triple-double, which is kind of nice to see.
Mm-hmm.
Also, like, I kind of like what Rick's doing a little more in terms of experimenting with his lineups. I mean, he almost played the full roster.
Yeah.
And there's lots of different lineups that he's expected to roll out. He's got a lot of different tools to see what can hit, see what doesn't hit. Jairus Walker, I think, is going to have a big year. I know he didn't really showcase anything the last game, but I'm a big believer in him. Mathurin, coming back off of his season-ending injury of last season, he's going to be a huge piece for the Pacers.
He was great.
Yeah, whether being a sixth man or not, I think that both him and Nembhard are going to take big steps up this year, but more specifically in Mathurin. Maybe at some point he'll earn that starting spot, but he was really stellar. Game-changer X-factor for the Pacers right now.
Do you think at all with Siakam, because he was obviously the best player in that game, and again, I know this is all one game, this is incredibly like overreactive, speculative, but with Siakam, the way that Tyrese like raises the caliber of the people around him, do you think Siakam can like is the main feature, at least on offense? Because like you said it yourself, it was an average game, but he still shot 8 for 15, had 19 points, and almost had a triple double.
Yeah, like I think that, you know, Siakam, he's gonna be a primary scorer on this team. Like when you're looking for a bucket and you need a bucket, it's probably going to go to him, at least, you know, for the start of the season. We'll see what Tyrese does with his efficiency for shooting, but you know, Siakam has a point guard that's going to distribute him the ball and get to him to all his spots.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe this season he gets back to that all-star
I think he should, yeah. Because this is the best point guard he's had since Prime Lowry.
Yeah, so, you know, he'll be... I think he's going to have another incredible season.
So, yeah. We only got a few more minutes here, and I also think he'll be an all-star again. Before we move on, I do just want to talk about, like, the bench. So, like, I looking at the minutes, yeah, Rick Carlisle was really experimenting with his different lineups. The only guys on the bench who got any, like, real minutes were McConnell, Mathurin, and Obi Toppin was involved a bit, too. One of the things I'm really... It's just so sad, is James Wiseman tore his Achilles. And I feel so bad for a guy like James Wiseman, just because everything he's been through in, like, with Golden State, and I know James Wiseman has like some mental issues, and then in Detroit he was looking solid, and then he comes to Indiana, which was supposed to be his chance. This was supposed to be his time to like prove himself, like, I'm a capable NBA player. And first game of the season, he tears his Achilles. Look, I think we all feel bad for Wiseman. My question to you then is, how does this affect Indiana's depth? Because I don't know if they have a lot of size like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was very big on the Wiseman acquisition when it first happened.
As was I, yeah.
I've always been a Wiseman fan, a believer. Really, really sucks to see, because, I mean, his preseason games were great. I mean, in this game specifically, he was on pace to drop 50 per 36 minutes. I mean, he was going to be like the perfect backup to Miles. I had faith in a resurgent season for him. Mm-hmm. But, I mean... The Pacers also do have guys like, you know, they've got Isaiah Jackson, who is also dealing with an injury right now, but it's minor. It's like day to day. I always liked Ijax. He's more of like just a shot blocker. He has a lot more to prove, but again, he's still a really young player. I believe he's only like 21 or 22 right now.
Right.
So, I mean, now he's not really as buried under Wiseman as he potentially could have been.
So you still think that the Pacers bench is going to be fine?
Oh, yeah. I think they have one of the deepest benches in the league.
Right.
And yeah, Mathurin's going to win Sixth Man of the Year this year.
All right. Well, we only got a few more minutes left, and I want to talk about, like, I was shocked by the result of this game. Shocked, no pun intended, because the Oklahoma City Thunder absolutely trounced the Nuggets. The final score was 102-87, and for the Nuggets not to even score 90 points, that's kind of insane. This is also, again, sorry, I hit my mic there. again, these are all one game, so all of this is incredibly like overreactive. We haven't seen that much. Our takes will get better and more realistic as we go into the season. But look, OKC, who, by the way, was my preseason pick to win the West. I think that OKC was already just like a fantastic young team with so much energy and effect. Like, they were effective at pretty much everything. And then they added the exact players I wanted, Isaiah Hartenstein, Alex Caruso, and they got rid of Giddey, who was kind of like the he was the mire on offense. He didn't quite fit. He was jank. He screwed things up. To see that team go into Denver, I think it was in Denver, to see that team go up against Denver and beat them like that and see how Chet have such a great game. I mean, 11 for 18, 25 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists. 5 assists is great for a center. But then 2 steals and 4 blocks. And then Shea, the guy who I think might win MVP this year, 11 for 24, he had 28 points, 7 rebounds, which is awesome for a point guard, 8 assists, 2 steals and 3 blocks, which is like unheard of for a guard, right? And then Caruso had a 91.3 defensive rating in 19 minutes. And like, this is just such a young, deep, energetic team.
Yeah, I mean, they're a scary team. They've got a lot of weapons.
Do you think that they'll win the West?
I think it's a good chance. I mean, it's got to be them or Minnesota or the Nuggets. I think it's between those three.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't get too worried about the Nuggets, though. I think that Russ is going to have a good season.
I think Russ, because he did not shoot well.
Yeah.
He had that one bad shot.
Russ could put some stuff together. All right. Save them a little bit.
Hey, thank you for coming on again, Sal. It's so great to see you, as always. The mics are coming off, but I'm still talking. Have a good weekend, everybody. Now everybody wanna sound like me. I'm